Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, May the 13th. We will find out this hour why and how words change meaning. We'll be talking with the author of the book Semantic Antics. Hope you're interested in calling in as we talk about words like disinterested and uninterested. Do you know the difference between the two, and did you know the meanings used to be reversed? What happened, and why? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Sol Steinmetz, lexicographer and editorial director of Random House Reference. Raised in Hungary, he is fluent in English, Spanish, German, Hungarian, Hebrew, and Yiddish, and he is the author of Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure, Ms. Garden.
So, talk about, this is fascinating, disinterested and uninterested.
Well, this is a case where the two words were simply easily confused, as you can tell by the fact that most people are confused about it. Today, disinterested, according to all the linguists, should really mean only one thing, impartial, neutral, while uninterested means not having an interest in something. Interestingly enough, though, the history is entirely different. Disinterested originally meant not interested, whereas uninterested meant impartial. However, over the years, the meaning reversed itself, and as we all know, today it's different. However, critics are still saying that people should use disinterested only to mean impartial, and uninterested meaning not interested.
Yeah, I know people are very interested in words and meanings and in this topic, but it's not clear as to how that particular example, how the meanings reverse themselves?
Well, it's, nobody really knows how they reverse themselves, except that you must realize that un and dis are really prefixes that have very similar meanings. So it's very easy to confuse the two. They both really mean not. Therefore, what happened was that over the years, people started using disinterested to mean uninterested.
I see. Yeah.
For no other reason than that it's a confusing prefix.
Yeah. And is that one of the reasons why words change meaning?
This is one of the reasons. Words change meaning simply because people don't know the difference between prefixes and suffixes are particularly guilty of confusing people. So I don't even want to go into it, but words like miss, M-I-S, misunderstood, you know, misgiving and so forth are often not really used properly, or at least not according to the way they're supposed to be used.
Yeah. What are some other reasons why?
Oh, other, mm-hmm. other reasons why words change meaning? Mm-hmm. Well, specialization is one. That is the narrowing of meaning. For example, the word deer, D-E-E-R, used to mean any beast or four-legged animal, a quadruped, like a camel and sheep. And it was because it was rivaled by the word beast, from Old French, you know. So hunters began to apply deer specifically to quadrupeds of the of the particular family which they hunted, which is the deer we know. But originally, of course, it simply meant an animal.
Well, that makes more sense to me. It's more specific.
That's right. This is called specialization.
Yeah. Anything? Any other reasons?
Oh, well, generalization, of course, is well known. Also, the broadening of meaning. For example, our very common word "thing," the thing, meaning any object,
mm-hmm.
Originally meant very specifically a meeting or assembly. The all thing was Scandinavian word for the assembly, for the parliament, Scandinavian parliament. And then, of course, it started to be generalized, because once it meant a meeting, it also came to mean a law court, a matter before a law court, or a matter of concern, an affair. Eventually, in the 1500s, it began to be used as simply anything is a thing.
Yeah, I'm going to the thing meant you were going to the meeting.
Exactly. That's what it meant originally, yes.
Talk about how one of the examples I used at the top of the hour is the word silly and how that has changed over the years.
Yes, silly is a very interesting one because, of course, this is an example of pejoration or the worsening of meaning. Silly originally, if you know German, you know the word selig. Selig means happy, blissful. It still does. In English, it meant silly, meant selig originally, meaning happy, blissful. Then gradually, this meaning changed or developed into being innocent, harmless, and then helpless, pitiable. That became more, you know, weakened into this meaning of weak and feeble. Finally, we have today's meaning, empty-headed, senseless, foolish. But it all began as happy and blissful.
Yeah, now how did that transformation happen?
Well, it happened simply because by the name, this is the one of the methods, one of the processes by which words change meaning. Something starts off as a nice word, you know, everything is fine with it. But gradually people, by constant use of it, people begin to change its meaning. This is what happened. This is how meanings change. People begin to use it in a less formal manner. Informally, as I say, happy and blissful for silly started to be changed to somebody who is happy. And blissful is also innocent and harmless, which turned into helpless, which turned into weak and feeble. And finally, our meaning, senseless, foolish, silly.
Yeah.
The reverse, of course, happens also. Take a word like nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice originally meant foolish, silly, ignorant,
because it
comes from a Latin word, nescius, meaning not knowing. And that changed gradually from foolish and silly. It came to mean cowardly. Then it developed into fastidious or fussy or dainty. And then from dainty, it came to mean satisfactory. And from satisfactory, it came to mean pleasant, attractive. And today, a nice person is a pleasant and attractive person. But originally, it meant a foolish, silly person. The very reverse of silly.
And you mentioned nice. Naughty went through a transformation too, didn't it?
The word naughty?
Yeah.
Of course. I think naughty also originally meant... I think it's related to the word, if I remember correctly, naught, meaning nothing. So naughty was something that meant all the refers came to naught, is what we use today. But originally, it meant morally bad, wicked, evil, It came to mean worth nothing, unworthy, bad, wicked.
Is this some sort of evolution or the words changing meaning over the years? Is this something that's common in all languages or?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Every language has that. In every language, some languages more so. I would say that the more primitive the language, less civilized people would not change the meanings too much. In other words, if you take most Indian languages, American Indian languages, and so forth, I don't mean Indian in India, but in American Indian languages, the meanings remained pretty much stable. But as people became more and more sophisticated and more civilized, presumably, by civilized, I mean literally lived in a civil society, in a very established and developed society, people, you begin to use words very liberally. And that is how words, in every language, words change meaning all the time. I don't want to start giving you examples from Hebrew and Yiddish.
No, thanks.
But in English, we know this is very typical.
Yeah, we are talking with Saul Steinmetz. He is a lexicographer, editorial director of Random House Reference. He is author of the book Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question, maybe a word. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, talking with her guest about the recent increase in violence in Sadr City, Iraq. That's coming up in our next hour. We're talking with Saul Steinmetz, author of Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. And our first caller is Tony in Juneau. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. My comment is about words. I was wondering if they tend to change due to their high usage, and because we as humans tend to want to be efficient, we shorten our words, kind of like contractions.
Well, contraction is one way in which words change, of course. We have many examples of that. But that doesn't change so much the meaning as the word itself changes. Most of the words that I deal with in my book are standard words that were not shortened or contracted, or so forth. Although that exists too, there's no doubt about it. You know yourself, many words that are contracted.
Yeah. Well, one question I have is then why it seems like our real high usage terms like and, but, or, for.
Sure, sure.
They seem to be very short, and I wondered if that had to do with evolution of words.
Not really. Those words are ancient. They go back, of course, to Old English, to Anglo-Saxon, as it used to be called. And they really are Germanic words. And these words are the ones that change least. The more they're used, the more common they are, and the more they simply exist as conjunctions or relational words, like the, is, of, and, a, in. These words don't change too much in meaning. They do subtly, in a way only, in idiomatic usages, but not really. The ones that change meanings are words like two-syllable, three-syllable words. That, I don't know, a million kinds. Humor, for example, is a very good example of a word that changed totally meaning, because originally it meant moisture.
Humor meant moisture?
Yes, in mm-hmm. medieval physiology, comes from Latin, humor, and it simply meant one of the four, humor meant one of the four type of moisture that the people emit, and each one presumably represented some kind of a personality. So, for example, the four fluids were blood, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile. And according to medieval physiology, they determine the person's health, mood, and disposition. And from the belief that these humors meant a state of mind or feeling or a mood or temperament, eventually it developed into the idea of a particular inclination, a mood, a fancy, a whim, a caprice. And so that brought us to the present meaning. Funny.
Yeah, and I suppose that has something to do with humorous and the funny bone.
Well, it's very good that you say that, because, of course, funny bone mm-hmm. is goes back to the idea that somehow humor is related to something in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it was directly connected with... In other words, the people who coined funny bone knew about the original meaning of humor.
Yeah. Well, that's what it reminded me of anyway. David in Ironwood, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of this words also come from culture interplay. I mean, like the whites calling the blacks bad, and then the blacks turning around, turning that into, you know, here's the black talk how bad they are as being something good. Or code words like gay, when, you know, early on, you know, they probably used it as where most people didn't know. Now, it's, when you say gay, homosexual.
Yes. Well, gay is a very good example of a drastic change in meaning
mm-hmm.
that occurred very recently. And I discussed it in the book also. But that actually is very untypical, because most changes occur very gradually. You know, not taking from some slang or specialized uses, as gay was. A good example might be the word lewd, L-E-W-D,
mm-hmm.
which originally meant a lay, meaning not clerical. You know, someone who is not in the clergy. And gradually what happened was somebody who was not learned and so forth came to be known as the ignorant or ill-bred, and then a vulgar, and eventually bad, vile, evil, wicked, and of course, lewd today simply means obscene, indecent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's a very gradual development that occurred over centuries.
But what happened with gay was that a group of people said, this is what we want to be called, and
right.
Yeah.
Gay is actually, it goes back to the 1930s, I believe, where originally, of course, gay meant happy and joyous, and we still use it in mm-hmm. that way sometimes. A gay Lothario or something. But what happened was that in the 1930s or 1940s, perhaps, they started talking about a gay boy. It was a disparaging term, actually. Gay bar, for a bar frequented by homosexuals. By the 1970s, the adjective had become so widespread that you talked about very naturally about gay day and gay ghetto and gay village, gay liberation front, gay lib. But it was a development from the word happy.
What about his other example, David's other example, about how slang sometimes is used and bad means good?
Well, yes, that occurs. That is also a relatively recent development. But you have to realize that usage is very limited. It's very much concentrated in a certain particular kind of slang. I think it's mostly African-American slang, where it reverses meaning. But my book deals only with words that have really changed meaning in the sense that the whole world uses it in a certain way, mm-hmm. not just a particular group of people. But that happens too. That's done deliberately. I think perhaps the closest example would be the word queer, because the word queer, if I remember correctly, or, of course, we know what it means today, but it was applied also very, very much to people who are, you know, in the homosexual area. I don't know if I discuss it in the book, come to think of it, but I do know that this is one of the things that occurs, is that you take a word that is meaning simply, you know, strange, weird, and then you begin to apply it sometimes, you know, in a nice way to those who are different from you.
Yeah,
but this is all narrow uses.
Let me get another caller in. Saeed in Platteville. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a few questions to our guest. Thank you for your time. And one of the questions is, can our guest come up with five English words ending at A-R-Y, Apple, Red, and Young. So
I didn't understand that, Saeed. Five words that end in A-R-Y, and then what?
Yes. Yeah, for example, sanctuary can be one.
Okay.
So, you know, the last three letters should be A-R-Y.
I don't know.
I don't get the picture.
But
if you're testing me about A-R-Y words, I can't answer you because I don't know. The answer is I don't know which of the five words. Could you tell me
Saeed,
which of
why don't
the five
you go
words?
Ahead and tell us, yeah.
Okay, second question is...
Well, tell us the five words, Saeed, because this isn't...
I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
Somebody asked me, my nephew asked me this question. I could not come up with those. No. I thought I will be.
That's not a tricky question, but it's a question of having to know which are the five words, and I don't know.
Okay. The second question is, when the use of cool, it's, you know, you're cool, you're hot, you know, all those words started giving the meanings they give today. And for example, I came here in this country in 1990, and I was working in the lab, and somebody asked, how are you doing? And the answer was, just hanging on. And I was thinking, who is hanging here? So all those words, when they start and the meaning that we have today actually came into use. For example, suppose I was in 1960s, I used the word just hanging on. Will anybody would have understood?
Saeed, I apologize. It's hard to hear exactly what you're saying on the cell phone. What I got out of that was, how did it start that we started using the word like cool or hot for meaning good, I guess, or great?
It's very similar. I understand what he's saying. What we do is we begin to apply words that are common words with a common meaning, and then we gradually change them around. A good example would be when somebody says, I have a cold. Now, when you have a cold, it means you have a catarrh, or you have, you know what it means, you have to have a cold. But
right.
Originally, of course, cold simply meant not being warm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then, because they associated in the past the idea of not being warm with the sickness that people, because people who get sick with a catarrh or some other the grip, they feel cold. So they began to use the word cold to mean the sickness itself. This is an application, this is called transfer of meaning, when a meaning of one word is transferred to something else. And this is what happens to hanging around. Hanging around is simply a slang way of saying sticking to each other, like when something is hanging. It's just an application of an old word to some new condition, a new situation. Mm-hmm. It's common enough, yes.
Chad, who is listening in Mexico City, Mexico, via the internet, emails this question. Will your guest please address the evolution and usage of the word irregardless?
Well, irregardless is well known, of course, as an example of mistaken usage, because the ending less means not.
Mm-hmm.
As I told you before, the not is a big problem. And the prefix IR means also not. So when you say irregardless, you are doubling the not. You say not regard not.
Right.
And so this became also a popular criticism of critics, of purists, who say you cannot use irregardless. You have to say regardless or irregarding or something like that. But this is something that people will do because they don't know the difference between prefixes and suffixes. As I explained right at the start of the program, that people confuse this and on in the same way they confuse ir, IR, and LESS. And that's the reason why.
And Jim in Oshkosh joins us next. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I am curious as to how a phrase related to the infinitive to use came into being. That is, I used to do that. I formerly did something. I posed this question once to Richard Lederer, and he couldn't answer it.
I can't answer it either.
I used to do something relate to use.
Yeah, well, what happens is that the word use means to employ, actually, right? So when you say I used you, you're only using it, you're only stating that in the past you employed it in a certain way. You're simply applying the word use, which is to employ, to something that occurred in the past, and you're using it. I hate to repeat the word use, but it's such a common word in the past tense, something that you have done before. I used to do certain things, but it's not an unusual change because it's really the same word. It means to employ. I employed it. I performed it. That's the only answer I can give you. Yeah.
Thanks.
I practiced it. Yes.
Thank you, Jim. Gordon in Greendale. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I think one of the most common confusions today is the difference between nauseous and nausea. People say I'm nauseous, which really should mean causing nausea, when they really mean nauseated. And I just wondered how that came about, except that it's just simply a confusion with no explanation.
Well, it's easy enough. You have to realize when words are very similar in spelling and even in the etymology, the source where they came from, it's easy enough to confuse their use. And I'm not saying it's necessarily wrong. When somebody says I am nauseous, they simply mean I am suffering from nausea. It is not wrong. In fact, the word nauseous goes back to this. 1600s, and it meant inclined to nausea. And your question is why they say I am nauseous instead of I am nauseated, is that it?
Yes.
Well, nauseated, to nauseate is a verb meaning to feel nausea. It also can mean to cause nausea. That story nauseated me.
He's saying it's a mistake.
Meaning it caused me nausea.
He's saying it's a mistake that people often make, and it is a mistake to say I'm nauseous.
No, it's not a mistake. I must disagree because there's nothing wrong with it. This is one of the uses that one of the suffixes is the O-U-S suffix, which is an adjective, and it means inclined to be nauseated or to have nausea. So I don't think so. You can be sometimes too strict about these things. Yeah. And one standard that we, this linguist, use is that if most people use a word in a certain way, that is the way it should be used. I am even in favor of not arguing about disinterested and uninterested. If people keep saying disinterested means uninterested, well, good enough for me.
Yeah.
I'll buy it.
You think it's good that our language is flexible like that?
Absolutely. There's no reason why not. I think you have to realize, I worked on Webster's Third International Dictionary, and I remember clearly that one of the major things that dictionary did, which annoyed many people, is it was permissive.
Mm-hmm.
It accepted usage as a standard which we should follow, rather than being puristic and insist that certain words cannot be used because it's not right, it's not correct, and so on.
Spencer in Madison emails this along these lines. My friend and I have an argument about the words borrow and lend. In correct usage, you should say, I lend money to you, but I borrow money from you. However, it's becoming very common to use the word borrow both ways. For instance, you might ask, can you borrow me a dollar, when you should really say lend. He corrects me on this every time, but it's my contention that language changes, and the meaning of the word borrow is expanding, and it's becoming just fine to use it both ways, because the listener can easily figure out what you mean from the context.
I go with you. I am with you on this. I would say that, of course, standard speakers, people who are careful with their language, will make the distinction between borrow and lend. There are many examples in history of borrow being used in the same sense as lend. So therefore, I don't see too much of a problem here. And as long as you say, your point is very well taken. If people understand what you mean, then no use correcting them.
Thanks to Spencer for that email. Our guest is Saul Steinmetz, a lexicographer and editorial director of Random House Reference. He is the author of Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. We welcome your questions for him, maybe your examples of words that have changed meaning that you know about. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you, talking first with her guest about the increase in violence in Sadr City. After 10, Kathleen and her guest will discuss a mother's story of a son at war told through poetry. Stay tuned for Kathleen Dunn between 9 and 11 this morning. We're talking about words and how and why words change meaning over the years. A number of examples of words that once meant one thing in the English language and turned into meaning something else. Our guest, Saul Steinmetz, who is author of the book Semantic Antics, and Jeannie in West Bend is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you to your guest. I'm going to stop correcting my husband on borrow and lend because that's great. Okay. So my comment has to do with the word reticent. It seems to me this is an example of a word that is going through a meaning transformation right now. Have you noticed this? And
like what?
Reticent? Well, I think the way I always had understood it, it meant a person, it was more of a characteristic of a person being quiet, taciturn,
and now
a man of few words, and now I see it as meaning hesitant. I'm reticent to go to that restaurant because...
Well, yes, it could be used that way. You're right. Originally, it did mean tendency to be silent and say little. This is the basic meaning of it. Actually, it meant silent. It's an intensive form of Latin tacere, meaning to be silent. So today, of course, it's starting gradually. You have pinpointed a very subtle change that is occurring in the language. It hasn't yet developed widely. And most people still say reticent, meaning, I hesitate. I'd rather not do this. But you're talking about the people saying, using it to mean, I'd rather not. Is that it?
So it always has meant hesitant and not just silent?
It meant originally, meant silent, then it developed into meaning of being hesitant,
So you're noticing, Jeannie,
I'm noticing it being used more, because I don't remember a few years ago hearing the word reticent used much at all. I would read it in books more than, but now I'm hearing people use it.
It could be, that people are starting to use it. As I say, this is a very natural development. From being silent and taciturn, as you say, to gradually being reserved and unwilling to do something, which is it's happening. It's in the course of changing meaning, developing a new meaning. Yes,
this is an interesting one too. Meat, the word meat, M-E-A-T,
yes.
Originally used to describe any type of food, and now, of course, it means. Meat.
one man's meat is another's poison. Originally meant one man's food is another's poison. And then it came to mean a meal, something one eats. And then it gradually, because most of the food that people ate as a meal was the flesh of animals. It was the main kind of food. So by this 15 or 1600s, it came to mean what we mean today. You know, meat is not any kind of food. It's just the food that we eat from the flesh of animals.
Yeah. Handsome. I would describe my husband as handsome. Very good looking.
Yes.
That did not mean that in the past.
No, I think it. I think originally it meant, as I think we discussed it in the book, and I think it meant handy.
Oh, he's not that.
Pardon?
He's not
he's
that.
Not handy. He's handsome, right?
Yes.
It was originally, it meant that people used to talk about, it meant easy to handle or use, as in handsome works. And then a handsome situation, meaning handy, convenient, a handsome, handsome house. And, of course, the current meaning, having a fine form or figure, attractive, good-looking, first appears in the 1500s. And the word is usually assumed to have been formed in English from hand plus some, as in toothsome. But it may have been borrowed, according to some authorities, from German handsam, or early modern Dutch handsam, meaning easy to handle or use. So it has nothing to do with, probably has nothing to do with the word hand itself. It is probably a borrowing from some other language, but it has developed very gradually to mean what it does today.
And if I described people or a group of co-workers as gossips today,
yes,
that means something different than what it used to
mean.
It
sure did, because gossip, of course, originally meant, godsib, meaning a godparent, someone who attended to a child's birth and the christening. And so it was a sponsor to the baptism. A godfather or godmother, that was what a gossip was, from the word god and sib, from the same word as sibling, relation, a kin. So gradually what happens in the late 1500s, the word was applied especially to a female group invited to be present at birth. And so at this kind of a gathering, a great deal of idle talk was exchanged, so therefore they began to talk about someone who is, a lot of gossip was exchanged, meaning a lot of talk between godsibs or godparents. And so eventually it came to mean in the late 1500s, a person, and mainly a woman, who engages in idle talk, a gossip. Which is today gossip, but it's a long story, as you can see.
Yeah. You know, I tend to worry too much, but that I'm talking about its current meaning. Its past meaning was strangle?
Oh, absolutely. If you know German, again, I have to repeat that English is a Germanic language. Wargen in German means to choke, to strangle. And originally the word to worry meant precisely that. It was when one choked on food or something, he was worried. Eventually what developed was that people who used the word started using it to mean it also had the secondary meaning of to kill by choking, as choking is an animal who were killed that way. But it came to mean a figurative meaning, to harass a person by rough and aggressive treatment, enemies worrying and preying upon one another. And in the 1600s, it took on the somewhat lighter sense of to annoy, vex, or pester, as in to worry visitors with foolish questions. And finally, around the 1800s, not long ago, the current meaning to distress or agitate, to make or be anxious or ill at ease, appeared. And I end my story in the book by saying Is it a coincidence that you get a strangling sensation in your chest when you're worried about something?
Well, there you go. I guess there's somewhat of a, there is a connection there.
Oh, yeah. There's a psychological connection.
Mike in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask Saul very quickly about words, you know, the illogical application of words like flammable and inflammable, because even today they have the same meaning. And I wanted to mention very quickly to your caller, Saeed, as far as words ending in A-R-Y, mortuary, which is a place for embalming dead people, aviary, which is a sanctuary for birds, and we mentioned sanctuary already, sanitary, meaning clean, and penitentiary, meaning a prison. Thank you very
much. Very good.
Way to go, Mike. I wish I had a prize for you.
Very good. You were asking about something else. You were asking...
He was talking about flammable and...
Yeah, well, this is a well-known case where this has caused a lot of problems because they used to put down on various objects, be careful, inflammable. And they meant, of course, that it could burst into flames. But then people didn't understand it. And they interpreted this meaning not, you know, like inauspicious or incapable. In can also mean not, so not flammable. So they didn't realize it. It was at that point that the people who prepared these signs began to use flammable. And so today you have to be very careful. If it says inflammable, it does mean that it can go burst into flames. But those who are very, very careful about it would use flammable to avoid the problem.
Marcus in Madison wants to know if you can clarify the use of the phrase, beg the question. Where did that come from? What is its proper use? Do you know about that, beg the question?
Well, it's not that difficult a problem because when someone has a question, says something and it is contradictory to what you believe it is, so he's begging the question. How it came about that it was used that way, I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that it's a usage, many, many idioms like that develop over a period of time. If by one person using it, if some particularly influential person uses the word in a certain way, then people begin to imitate it. And this is one of the ways in which this particular idiomatic phrase begs the question that may have come about. I'm looking at a book that I have in front of me, but it doesn't discuss that particular thing. Perhaps if I should look under beg instead of question, I might find it there. But I'm not really sure how these idioms, idioms in general are hard to explain, their development anyway. They just happen by usage.
Yeah. Jim in Monona is with us now. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, since your guest is fluent in both Yiddish and German and English, could he help me with the word S-T-I-E-N, whether it's pronounced Stein or Steen? In Milwaukee, if you're Yiddish, you say Steen. If you're German, you say Stein. But even some of the Jewish folks call themselves Stein. How do you determine Stein and Steen?
Well, actually, the word comes from... my name is Stein Metz. It originally meant stonemason. The German word Stein, it's pronounced with a sh. Stein means stone. And it's the same word as the English stone, except because both are Germanic words. Very often people don't like to use the Germanic pronunciation, which in Yiddish is Stein also. And in English, it should be Stein, as I use my name, Stein Metz. But people, particularly when it comes as an ending to the word, Bernstein is a good example, or Goldstein. People like to say Goldstein and Bernstein. No real explanation except that they no longer associated with the word stone unless they changed the word, you know, Goldstone or Bernstone or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But these are usages that develop over a period of time when people don't know exactly where a word, where a name or a word comes from.
Why do you think it's important for people to know why and how words change meaning, the evolution of words?
Well, it's only interesting. Just like most of the books on words are about the etymology, where the words come from, the history of the word itself. My interest is not so much in this book, is not so much where the word comes from, but how it changes meaning. It's educational. If we find out that, if we realize that words change meanings, we'll be much more careful in how we use words. We're not going to use them in a loose manner if we know that there is a specific meaning that is being applied these days. Let's say the word fulsome is a very good example. You constantly hear of people talking about fulsome praise. Now, fulsome originally did mean full praise, a lot of praise, a great deal of praise. Today, often, or for many years, fulsome came to have the meaning of over excessive praise, not nice, too much praise, you know? Again, the word full has this double sense in it of a lot and too much. And so this is a typical example of how words are being used. So if you're making a speech and you're saying to I want to lavish fulsome praise on this person, and you mean to say a great deal of praise, you better be careful, because somebody might think that you mean to say too much praise.
I see. And we'll leave it there. We're out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Ms. Garden.
Sol Steinmetz, author of Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour. Thanks to Sarah Carroll for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I want to remind you that Ira Flato of Talk of the Nation Science Friday is coming to Wisconsin. He'll be broadcasting Science Friday live this Friday from the Milwaukee Public Museum. We have all sorts of fun activities planned in Milwaukee, a reception. There's a special dinner if you'd like to buy a ticket to that. More information on our website, wpr.org. Hope to see you there. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.